Master Warrant Officer, Red Light Willett, Dallas James Willett, in for the Quinney International Air Show. Appreciate you taking the time. If you can tell us a little bit about your history, your connection to the Lancaster bomber, and what it means to see it again after all these years.
Yeah, well, where I got tied up with the Lancaster, renewed with the Lancaster bomber, is I was helping to look after Remembrance Day program in the Heritage Village, which is a senior complex in Vineland. And when we, when I first joined the military in 1948, the whole Army of the West, we were called on to go out. The big floods were on out in BC. So they took us by train as far as Calgary. Then they put us on planes to fly us over the mountains, which I'd never seen. That was the first time I've ever seen mountains. First time I was ever in an aircraft was because being a young recruit and where I was standing, I was in the rear rank, and they gave a right turn. I was the first man to go aboard the plane, and they put me in the nose. So I flew over the mountains in the nose of a Lancaster bomber, and that would be about May 1948, I guess. And now it's the end of my career, basically. And again, I guess because of my age, I doubt I'll be taking any too many more flights.
Right.
So the plan was to have my last flight in a Lancaster bomber. But whether it happens today or not, I don't think so. I think it'll just be put in the, you know, have a chance to sit in the bomber, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the Lancaster bomber. But this program we also have at Heritage Village there on the Remembrance Day, we're pure luck. The plane flies over our area every Remembrance Day. And we just happened to be taking a picture of lowering of the flag, and the plane was in the picture. So our program, front of our program, the picture is of the lowering of the flag with the Lancaster bomber flying over.
Right.
It's very impressive, actually.
Can you tell me, tell us, you were in the Korean War, sir?
No. Our outfit, right after World War II, they formed an outfit called the Mobile Strike Force. We were the only airborne artillery battery in the Canadian Army, and we supported the Patricias, the RCRs, and the Van Dues. And it was like a basic damn near miniature brigade is what we were. But because the size of the infantry battalions, they used to rotate through Korea. With our battery never left Canada. There would be men would leave our battery for, you know, they're specialists in something, and they would, like, if they need a signaler or a driver or something, most of the time, because the Army was very small at the time, they would take them. But our main job, basically, was to look after Canada. And that's where our first major exercise was in 1950, was in Alaska. Basically, when the Korean War broke out, and that was our job, was the North. We were responsible for the North. So most of our parachuting, main parachuting, was done up in the Arctic. And that was our... And I served in every airborne battery there was ever in the Canadian Army.
Were you able to choose to do it in June as opposed to the middle of December, or did they allow you to choose when to jump?
Yeah, we always did. I became the first battery sergeant major of the airborne battery, which was within the regiment. The airborne regiment was in Edmonton, and that was one of our main things. Was on the 5th, 6th of June, we'd do a mass drop in front of the spectators up there. We always respected the 5th to 6th of the June. We only had two men in the outfit that had served in World War II for that one.
Yeah.
But back when Koreans started up, which I was in the military at the time, like I say, I was in the airborne battery, and they didn't post us. I was one of the few, I guess, they kept in the battery for unknown reasons, maybe, you know. So I spent many years in the airborne battery. And then from there, I did end up in the regiment and went to Europe. And my last posting was to Ottawa. I was in the war games section in Ottawa. And people used to ask me what I did, and I couldn't tell them, so I used to tell them I played with dinky toys.
Dinky toys.
Yeah, well, I couldn't say anything else. We lately had drones long before people even realized there were drones around, this type of thing.
Right.
And we worked with civilian scientists, and what we would do is we'd send a report into our main headquarters, and it helped them to decide what Canada was going to buy for the Army, on that side, whatever it was. And we'd give them, our report would help them decide, because we'd get all the characteristics of whatever country was building, say, an APC, and wherever, and then we get all that, and then we'd run up, we'd run our games with their.
What's an ABC?
Armored personnel carrier.
Oh, APC. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. APC. And like any type, anything that the Army needed, we would, and of course anything else, because it was a war game section. But the section I was in was Army, and the Army is the only one that had a big, what we consider a big section of military, all retired guys, like put out the pastures, I call it, were just
right,
our last posting. Like the air didn't only had a couple up there, and same with the Navy. They didn't have the, we had like the red room and the blue room and the control room and this type of thing. We used to go out and do exercise with the brigades, and at the staff college in Kingston there, the military college, we'd run exercises for them. But that was our sole job. It was interesting because being a field man, you know, I wasn't if I was out and sitting at a desk, you know, tying knots,
sure,
I
sure,
guess.
Sure.
So it kept me involved with it.
Now, can you tell me, Trenton is obviously quite the facility now as it grew over time, but have you been to CFB Trenton a number of times through different parts of your military career?
No, just passed through, because I don't think we have it anymore. But we started, like, when I went to Europe the first time, it was by boat, you know, ship, I should say. But then later on, whenever we went any place, we used to fly. So we always would be flying through Trenton.
Mm-hmm.
I never was posted in, like, I'm from Ontario originally. I come from the Pickering area. Mm-hmm. And my family, you know, I'm back through generations. But I never got a posting into Ontario until I got posted to Ottawa. I was either out west or over in Europe, mm-hmm. one of the two. That was that's the way out there.
There's the Heritage Museum and the static displays and all those things here. When you see some of these planes, Dallas, that are, well, even the Tudors, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, does it take you back to a memory? Does it take you back to a time? Does it remind you of a smell? Does it bring you back to a point in life?
No, the planes, the Lancaster always enters me because it's now in Hamilton, as you know. And when they're out doing any flying, you can hear, you know the sound right away. So that always intrigues me. We go into the Air Museum to have a look at. But as far as Trenton, when I came back from Europe, I come to Trenton first and then carry on from there. But apart from like that, so the part of getting the nostalgia, like spending 35 years in the military, like it was my second family. In fact, there's a lot of my buddies, their kids were their aunt and uncle. Like my wife and I, we were aunt and uncles to all these different camps. I, in fact, had three of them name their son after me. You know, because we got to be so well known. And you'd keep running into the same, like I was lucky in a way, I'd run into the same guys a lot of times.
And different locations.
Different locations. But there was four of us that seemed to pretty well stick together. And but in fact, the one guy that Skinner with, his little guy, he's about this big. I said, "What's your name?" And he said, "Mr. Skinner." I called him Mr. Skinner to this day. You know, I still call him Andy, though, but whenever, as soon as I see him, I call him Mr. Skinner.
So. My late father-in-law was a zipper head out, and his last job was to work on the Tudors and Moose job. But his best friend was an airborne member. And I always wanted to ask him about the airborne, because anything that's like elite military, particularly young men have an obsession with learning more about them. But for you, what was the airborne? What was the most important characteristic or memory that you have of the airborne, Dallas?
Well, of course, my comradeship. Like when I first took my jump course in 1949, and the first day we were going, my stomach was going 100 miles an hour.
Sure.
But we didn't jump till Wednesday. So by the time I jumped, I was cool as a cucumber, and it's never bothered me since. Like, if they ask me today to jump, I go and jump for them. That's the way I feel inside.
Yeah.
But I've always had, like, in fact, I mentioned to the CO there one time, I said, "Do you realize in the Canadian Artillery, in every regiment, every RSM was an ex-airborne gunner?" They have that extra, something special. Anytime we compete with the other outfits, we normally come in first, because we just have whatever's in our bodies to accept it.
And right.
The courage part, the together, the brotherhood, everything about it and where we go. Like when we were in Edmonton, we were the first ones on the ground for the FLQ in Montreal when that happened, and in the other places too. Like we had guys in Ottawa there, they'd be sitting in the barbershop with their gun right in their, you know, with bullets in it, mm-hmm. right with them, like this type of stuff. We were down in Montreal, and there were some interesting stories there too.
And it was interesting because you were saying your main focus was Canada. There's times where Canada's been close to a situation that was quite serious like that. I wanted to ask you before we go, Red Light. Can you tell us the story of why your nickname, Red Light?
Oh, that was one of the... What happened when we're in Edmonton, like that's... They were training the dispatchers. And we could go up and get an extra jump in. That's like on that particular day. We're up there having a jump in. But we could always remember, although like we have the red and the green light. The red light is you're on hold. And when the green comes on, that's when the dispatcher gives you the go. Well, the verbal command always takes over from the light, even though it's a red light. So I happen to be the first man on the stick. That's what we call him for jumping out with. And he said, go. And I hesitated, but then your mind clicks in pretty quick. And away I went. Yeah. And it was red. I went out on a red light. So obviously, because of the speed of an aircraft, I don't land nowhere as close to the rest of the guys. And they're rolling on the ground when we get back at me because I, with my experience, that I'd gone out on the red light, and that's where the nickname Red Light come from. I'd been given various names in my career, like in football they called me Crazy Legs, you know. So there was I was called One Eye because they stopped me jumping for a while because I had a bum eye. So and mostly you find me because of the friendship. We had all kinds of different names of people.
How many jumps did you do, Dallas? Do you
I did a little over 150. So,
And over how long of a period of time would that have been?
A little over 10 years.
So at least one a month. You were doing for quite a while, or more or less.
We're doing more when they formed the New Airborne Regiment, which was 1968 up in Edmonton. Right? We used to get a lot of jumping there. In the old airborne batteries, we didn't get much jumping there. Like I went on when we converted from a T-7 to a T-10 parachute. Like we got extra jumps in that way, but normally we were happy when all of a sudden we're on the list for a drop. Unless we're going on an exercise. Like we did a lot of our jumping was done up in the Arctic, various places. And where we first started to our training up in the Arctic was at Churchill.
But I
got a feeling the polar bears chased us up. I don't know, but I never came across one when we were up there. But in fact, I came very close to being posted there. But again, they kept me in the battery, like the airborne battery. Whether it was the job I did or the background or whether I was one of their favorites or whatever it was, I stayed with the airborne until it folded. And then in 68 when they formed it, that's when I became the first BSN battery sergeant major of the airborne battery in Edmonton. So, and then, of course, from there I went to Germany. And then, like as they do, you know, they post you around. And that's when I ended up in the war games, and then I got retired in Ottawa.
So Master Warrant Officer Dallas Red Light James Willett, and I think we got all the nicknames in there and everything else, Crazy Legs. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for taking your time today.
I ran marathons. I've been to the top of Ben Nevis, done the Nijmegen marches. So I've had, like I said, quite a career. But I was an army teacher at Shiloh there, but we call them instructors. I had the apprentice soldiers for a few years. They were quite a group to handle, 16 and 17 year olds. And in the hockey, I was their coach, manager, the whole nine yards. I wouldn't play hockey with them because we had competitions against other apprentice units. But I played broomball. We even won the Shiloh broomball championship. I had myself and a couple other guys, but I had a couple of the military policemen on the team too, so the apprentices would get to know them.
Right.
You know, it was a two-way street for that. That was the idea of it. So, yeah. I had a good career, but that's one thing I didn't do. I didn't get to Korea. We damn near, as a battery, we're damn near going to quit jumping because if you quit jumping, then they post you out because we wanted to go to Korea, you see. But then when we explained why they wanted to, we had to have X number of us there because of, actually, see, Russia, they controlled the Korean War. They were the. If you read back on the history of it, you'll find that old Joe Stalin controlled. Even when the Chinese joined the North Koreans there, it was Stalin that gave the go ahead on that. Mm. A lot of people didn't realize that. They thought it was just Korea against Korea. But
Some things never change, do they?
No, it was communism. It's just starting to raise its ugly head at the time. And old Joe, he was the one that controlled it. So we had to let them know that we were with the Americans, of course, because they got the population, that we were there also. We also had like our own ranger outfit up in the north, and we still have to this day.
Rangers still
there. You had to give the eyes of the sky, you know. But they still have our unit at that time. That was one of our main jobs was the protection. Well, the main job was the protection of our country.
Yeah.
And whether it be forest fires, like you say, going there at the FLQ, whatever, prison breaks, anything at all would happen. I am likely the only man in the world that ever hit a herd of buffalo. People's hit deer and moose and all that, but I actually hit a herd of buffalo with an army jeep and a trailer out getting supplies. And we, if he'd been over another 6 inches, I wouldn't be here talking to him, but he would have wiped us out. But as it was, we brushed him off the side. The next day we went up in the helicopter and we spotted the herd, and there was one there with a smashed left hip. So, which we had him done away with.
So our job probably tasted delicious, didn't he?
Yeah. Our job was there was to save, it was the whooping crane. The fire was burning through the muskate, and if it got to the nest, that was the only whooping crane nest was in the world. And that's why I came off leave at 8 o'clock in the morning. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we were up in there and spread out in groups to dig trenches to save them because they couldn't take heavy equipment in. So we were in there to dig the trench to. So, that's to say, there's so many jobs people don't realize that has to be looked after, and who they call on this.
I was moving cranes to the FLQ to the Arctic.
Yeah. Oh, that was an interrupt. I rode shotgun with our commander, and I with live bullets in for firing through windows. Not smoke grenades. Tear gas. Mm-hmm. I'd be firing the tear gas in things, yeah. Stuff like that. Yeah, there's a lot of jobs like that was done that the people didn't realize that had to be done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was that? The other one I was going to say was that. Yeah, we went from the BC floods in '48. Then we go up to Alaska for the major exercise because that's when the Korean War was breaking out. And then we did the Winnipeg flood. Then we're on the Winnipeg flood. So I got to be an expert dike player too.